A few years ago, Mae Danowski co-founded a Substack called Nato Thoughts. She's a threat intelligence analyst who specializes in China's cybersecurity. And she has a strong and loyal following, but nothing crazy. That is until this past President's Day weekend, when this news story broke.
There's been an extraordinary leak of a trove of documents
by the Chinese government that reveals spyware and even
large-scale cyber attacks against foreign governments, companies, and more.
That would be very upper alley, except as fate would have it, she had taken a rare weekend off and had gone to Philadelphia with her husband and niece. While the cyber research world was abuzz with the Chinese version of the Conti leaks, Mae was touring Independence Hall and running up those stairs from the Rocky movie.
So it was the long weekend. So I didn't really check a lot, you know, my emails, my chat and stuff.
But then she started getting all these texts from her friends.
Somebody already was telling me, sending me a link, you should look at this.
And when she checked her site, all of a sudden she noticed traffic on her Nato Thoughts blog was going crazy.
And then I saw people was reading all my Nato Thoughts, the one I wrote about ISO. I was like, what?
iSoon, a fairly well-known Chinese tech company, had sprung a leak. Thousands of internal documents and private chats from the company suddenly appeared on GitHub, a popular coder's website. And the documents provided unshakable proof that iSoon was in cahoots with the Chinese government. The leaked papers included major contracts with government agencies that had clearly been paying iSoon to build hacking tools and surveillance programs, in addition to vacuuming up intelligence on their behalf, which, until the leaks, everyone sort of had to piece together. And now the details were right there in black and white for all the world to see.
It's huge. I was just so surprised to see the amount of the information came out.
It was a goldmine for researchers like Mae, who for years have been trying to decode the secret world of China's hackers for hire. Sure, people knew the government worked with private companies to steal information and hack into networks, but they assumed it worked the way stuff like this usually does in China, with something called guanxi, which loosely means connections. Traditionally, Chinese businesses landed contracts because they were run by a relative of a local party official, or they knew the right people, not because they were the best company for the job.
The government just handed them projects, handing them tasks, but oftentimes it's not that way.
The leak made plain that while guanxi was still there, the Chinese government's cyber attacks are being fueled by something much bigger than that. They're the result of a massive, well-structured hacking industry that has been years in the making, a kind of Chinese cyber industrial complex, which helps explain, partly, why Chinese attacks in cyberspace seem to be getting a lot more serious and a lot more dangerous. From Recorded Future News, I'm Dina Temple Preston, and this is Click Here, a podcast about all things cyber and intelligence. We tell true stories about the people making and breaking our digital world. And today, inside the iSoon papers, a 190-megabyte leak of secret contracts, presentations, client lists, and chat logs that are pulling back the curtain on China's secret world of hackers for hire. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she and will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Click Here.
iSoon is kind of notorious in China because the company's CEO is a bit of a local hacking rock star. In fact, his hacker handle, to give you an idea of his specialty, is Shutdown.
He's well known. He's definitely well known because he was the Green Army member, the member of the Green Army.
It dates back to 1997.
That's the first hacker group established in China.
It was a collective of several thousand self-described Chinese patriotic hackers, a bunch of young people who were good with computers who decided to launch a campaign to break into foreign websites on China's behalf. They hacked Taiwan for wanting to be independent of China. They targeted Japan for not sufficiently owning up to the atrocities of the Nanjing massacre. Some of the Green Army's most prominent members, like iSoon's CEO, moved out of the volunteer patriotic hacking business into the private sector. They went on to create giant cybersecurity firms motivated by a very capitalist mindset.
And is that sort of a normal process for, you know, you start out as a hacker and then you sort of develop a cybersecurity company and then you work with the government? Is that a normal route?
You can say it's a route. Because all these hackers, later realize, you have a patriotic sentiment, that's a good thing. But the thing is, like, they were thinking about their future, how they can grow in this big environment as everybody was doing business.
And the businesses just took off, and they started doing the kinds of things you usually see in mature industries, like starting to file for patents. According to data on Google patents, iSoon has filed for patents for pretty aggressive techie things. They seem to be developing the kinds of tools that could help launch cyber attacks. For example, one of their patents was for a way to use Wi-Fi to crack into a computer network. Another described an intelligence platform that could help customers target key individuals and organizations. And that was what was public, if you knew where to look. But definitive proof of iSoon's government ties, the first real crack in this great wall of secrecy, came out kind of by accident in a lawsuit last year. It was filed in a local Chinese court. Neither party probably thought anyone would notice. And it involved iSoon and a tech company called Chengdu 404.
That's one of the company I've been following for a while.
To the uninitiated, this court filing looked like your average intellectual property dispute. Chengdu 404 and iSoon were fighting over a software development contract. But to insiders like May, the case was a revelation. First, because it involved Chengdu 404, which, it turns out, is not just any tech company. It's a well-known front for the Chinese Ministry of State Security, which is responsible, among other things, for foreign intelligence, counterintelligence, and the political security of the Chinese Communist Party. And the U.S. Justice Department actually said as much a few years ago when it indicted a handful of Chengdu 404 employees. The charges? Essentially, hacking on behalf of the Chinese government.
We have unsealed three indictments that collectively charge five Chinese nationals with computer hacking.
And then, if that wasn't enough, there was more proof that surfaced around the same time as that obscure lawsuit that was filed last year. It was a video posted on Chinese social media. This is from that video, which is entitled Cybersecurity Talent Training Seminar 2. And that voice you're hearing? is iSoon's chief technology officer. He's telling a classroom of students that protecting the internet is already a boom industry in China, full of opportunity. And then he said the quiet part out loud. Cybersecurity projects in China today, he said, are being led by the government. The iSoon leak didn't just underscore that point. It also revealed details that Beijing doesn't want people to know about how this public-private partnership works.
There's interesting conversations in the leaked document in the iSoon. You know, have a lot of chat between the employees with the clients. They often mentioned saying, oh, do you know so-and-so in this company? Sounds like they got a big contract with the Public Security Bureau. You know, could we tag along?
Right. So everybody was sort of pals with each other.
Yeah, they call them drinking buddies, but they also compete with each other, like try to poach their best talent. You can say some of the big fish, you know, to eat the small fishes.
And these drinking buddies aren't just employees of iSoon. And this is really the biggest revelation of the leaked documents. They provide the first real concrete proof, not just that iSoon works for the government, but that many tech companies do. And it shows just how massive and mature this hacking for hire industry in China has become.
There's 120 contracts shown in the leaked document.
The documents include over 100 contracts that iSoon had with other tech companies and the Chinese government. Inside, there are literally dozens and dozens of companies people didn't know had government ties that are now publicly outed. And that's just what's included in this leak. Researchers say that's only the tip of the iceberg. The iSoon papers provide this other important thing, the first real look at how cutthroat this vast company network is. It reveals a little mini Silicon Valley drama with key employees getting poached, companies promising investments, and all the jockeying for position and trying to prove their value to the state appears to be paying off. The leaked documents provide a laundry list of pilfered information, such as 95 gigabytes of immigration data stolen from India, hacked call logs from a South Korean telecom provider, internal documents from Malaysia's Senate. And it also shows employees of iSoon actually thinking through their plans for future hacks. There's some chat logs between employees talking through ideas on how to best crack into the Treasury and Home Office in the UK. And when we come back, China seems to be doubling down on cyber operations and what US officials are doing in response.
We've started that journey. Different sectors are at different places of maturity.
Stay with us.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
The man considered the father of China's information warfare doctrine is this unlikely character, a low-level People's Liberation Army officer named Shen Wei Guang. He understood the power of technology, but allegedly, he couldn't even type.
He was computer illiterate. He didn't really know how to use a laptop, a computer.
In 1979, Shen was a soldier fighting in the Sino-Vietnamese War, a conflict which lasted all of 27 days.
It was a poor man's war. Little else but infantry and artillery were used. The Chinese set out to teach Vietnam a lesson.
While the short battle was considered a draw, the fight itself deeply affected Shen. so much that it made him consider other ways nations might settle their differences.
He was thinking, you know, can we have a fighting without blood?
A war without bullets. So he wrote a book in 1985. This was just 2 years after ARPANET gave birth to the internet. Future wars, Shen said, would be fought with information. And the idea landed with a thud. People totally dismissed it. Like, sure, Shen, in the future, we won't fight with guns. We'll just fight with data. And that might have been it had Shen not decided to write an article for a military publication in hopes of getting his ideas out more broadly.
His first piece was published in the PLA Daily.
The PLA Daily, the People's Liberation Army's paper of record. And it couldn't have happened at a more opportune time, because just 3 years later...
An explosive development near the Persian Gulf. Word that Iraq has invaded neighboring state of Kuwait, with fighting reported along the border. The residents say...
The U.S. military eventually stepped in and showed just how much technology could do. The Gulf War became the world's first computer war. It revealed the huge technology gap between the U.S. military and everyone else. Computer-assisted weapons, teleconferences among generals, and it was all out there for everyone to see on live TV. And it rather famously rattled the Chinese leadership. They felt so behind. And Shen's high-tech information war suddenly didn't seem so crazy after all. The military started to take a second look at his writing. They even assigned his original book for soldiers to study.
The military picked it up, tried to study, you know, what's really is information warfare. Finally, people realize the information warfare is the thing.
Shen got invited to conferences, and he wrote a second book. And then he started to refer to himself as a futurist, which clearly he was. And all this got even more momentum after Chinese leader Xi Jinping came to power, because he made cyber a priority. All of a sudden, China was stepping up its use of zero days, those security holes in widely used software that no one knows about. Not so long ago, Chinese hackers went to global hacking competitions to find vulnerabilities in software and then release them to the world so they could be patched. Now the Chinese seem to be hoarding vulnerabilities for their own use.
They don't use a whole lot of custom tooling, things that could be signatured. They'll use things that, you know, the typical network administrators often use for remote management of servers and things like that. So, you know, they're difficult to detect.
This is Michael Horka, a senior information security engineer at Lumen Technologies Black Lotus Labs. And he says the influx of all of this new private talent and the new training for China state hackers has allowed them to up their game even more. And one group in particular has become increasingly aggressive, a state hacking group called Volt Typhoon. And its MO is targeting critical infrastructure.
Your water utilities, electric utilities, transportation, maritime, stuff like that.
This was big news earlier this year when FBI Director Chris Wray unexpectedly announced that the U.S. had found Volt Typhoon malware pre-positioned in critical U.S. networks. They were lying in wait in power stations and aviation networks. Ostensibly, it was in anticipation of needing them for some future attack. And we talked about this in a previous episode. The big takeaway, Ray told us a few weeks ago, isn't that the Chinese government is doing this, but rather how much they're doing it.
We're seeing it now on a scale and intensity that we have not previously seen.
Which explains why Biden administration officials are increasingly seeing these kinds of cyber operations through a new lens. U.S. companies have always been asked to patch and update and silo their systems to guard against attacks. But now there's also a push to have something in place, a kind of plan B, something to lean on in case nation-state hackers manage to crack into critical systems.
Because what really matters, preventing the disruption of critical services that Americans rely on, from water to pipelines to electricity.
This is Ann Neuberger, She's the Biden administration's deputy national security advisor for cyber and emerging technology. We met at a restaurant on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference late last month. And she says one of the big problems is there aren't agreed upon norms when it comes to this kind of information warfare. And she confirmed that there are ongoing discussions with the Chinese at the highest levels to see if there's a way to agree on some.
To convey and to discuss rules of the road.
And is that actually being pursued now?
There have been high-level discussions of that.
And do they get that this is not something that they should be doing? She wouldn't bite on the question.
I can't. Clearly, we convey the message.
Which brings us back to that recent leak of documents from iSoon. Among other things, the materials revealed an 8-year effort by the company to target just about anything it could get its hands on. Databases, communications. And while it doesn't appear to be pre-positioning malware in critical networks like Volt Typhoon, May Danowski from NATOthought says they are definitely leaning in and trying to meet the moment. They aren't just defending their networks, they're doing what Shen suggested they do all those years ago. They're using data instead of bullets.
Their goal to become a superpower is on par with United States. Then the United States do have offensive capability that's well known.
Right. How do you compete if you don't have offensive cyber too?
Yeah.
And if all this sounds familiar, it should. Using outsiders to help you hack isn't a Chinese invention. Russian cyber gangs have been targeting Moscow's adversaries for years. Iranian hacktivists do too. And that arrangement gives the leadership in both those countries a patina of deniability. The iSoon papers suggest that China has developed a kind of hacking with Chinese characteristics. They've chosen something they're good at, running a business. So they've opted to recruit private industry instead of private gangs. It's something they can control, but is just independent enough that when something goes awry, Beijing can claim, hey, it wasn't us. This is Click Here. Here are some of the top cyber and intelligence stories of the past week.
Medical providers grappling with system outages used for medical billing and insurance claims, but there could be a glimmer of hope that things could...
Systems that change healthcare, one of the largest healthcare payment systems in the U.S., are slowly returning to normal after a devastating cyber attack. For weeks, patients have had trouble filing insurance claims, getting prescriptions, and paying doctor bills. According to Change's parent company, United Health Group, pharmacy services like electronic prescribing have returned, but the payments platform and medical claims network won't be back online until later this month. The company has blamed the ransomware group Black Cat for the attack, and there are differing accounts as to whether the company paid a ransom. Change has declined to say on the record that it met the group's demands, while other reports say they paid $22 million to unlock their systems. Also last week, President Biden said he'd sign a bill banning TikTok if lawmakers get it to his desk. On Thursday, a House committee advanced a bill with a rare unanimous bipartisan vote, 50-0. The bill wouldn't ban TikTok outright, but instead seeks to force its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, to sell the app or face restrictions that could prohibit it from U.S. app stores. TikTok has fired back.
So almost an hour ago, I got this notification from TikTok that says, stop a TikTok shutdown. And I was like, what? TikTok?
By recruiting its users and asking them to dial up their representatives in Congress and urge them to vote against the bill.
So that's what I'm going to do. Hi, I heard that you're trying to shut down TikTok.
Several lawmakers' offices on Capitol Hill said they'd received hundreds of calls, some of them from very confused teenagers. A lot of them apparently did a very teenager thing when lawmakers' offices picked up the phone. They just hung up. The Senate, for its part, has yet to introduce a companion bill. And finally, some unusually good non-news from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. They say Super Tuesday in the U.S. went off without a hitch, without any cybersecurity threats. The agency didn't say whether that somehow bodes well for the general election in November.
Today's episode was produced by Sean Powers, Kat Shuknecht, and me, Jade Abdul-Malik. It was edited by Karen Duffin, fact-checked by Darren Ancrum, and contains original music by Ben Levingston, with some other music from Blue Dot Sessions. Our staff writer is Lucas Riley, and our illustrator is Megan Goff. Click Here is a production of Recorded Future News. Tune in on Friday for Mic Drop, which features our favorite interview of the week, and we'll have a new episode of Click Here on Tuesday. See you then.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.